Okay, so thank you everyone for coming, very much appreciated. The topic for tonight is the series is The Greatest Controversies in Jewish History Explained, and it begins with the disagreement between Hillel and Shammai. Now, this is a very significant disagreement because it's really the first documented and serial disagreement that you have in Jewish history. Yes, there are some disagreements we know of that come before, like Korach against Moses, and there are some disagreements between Aaron and Moses, but this is the first documented and sustained disagreement that actually goes on for some generations. The reason this is an extremely important topic is not just because of its relevance to Judaism and the way the Torah Shebaal Peh we have today looks, but it's also very connected to the environment that takes place in the time of the end of the Second Temple. And actually, interestingly, some of the things that we'll see here help explain also how Christianity, in what environment Christianity began. So it's an extremely important topic. It's important to distinguish between the disagreements between Hillel and Shammai and Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. So Hillel and Shammai live about 100 years before the destruction of the Second Temple. There isn't so much strife and inner conflict among the Jewish people like you see towards the end of the Second Temple, but it is a disagreement. The disagreement that you see between their disciples, Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, that already overlaps with the time right before the destruction of the Second Temple. And so that's where you'll find a lot of similarities between their disagreements and what's going on generally among the Jewish people, the Karaites, the Sadducees, the Pharisees, and all of those disagreements. So I'll go straight to source one, which speaks about the importance of Hillel himself to the Jewish people. So the Gemara says, this is from Masechet Sukkah, "Shebatchila kshenishtakcha Torah meYisrael, Ala Ezra miBavel veYisda." In the beginning, when Torah was forgotten from among the Jews because of exile, Ezra came to Israel and he really established the Torah in a firm way. Chazra veNishtakcha, it was forgotten again. Ala Hillel aBavli veYisda. Hillel came from Babylon, and he established it. Now, something that's going to help us understand a lot of what goes on between Hillel and Shammai is that Hillel comes from a very, very poor family. It says that he would come and he would work and he would earn a very minimal amount of money and he would give half of it to sort of tuition to the guard of the Beit Midrash, and then half he would sustain his family. There's that famous story of Hillel laying on the roof of the Beit Midrash because he couldn't afford to come in, and it was snowing and he freezes. Basically, in order to sustain the expenses that a synagogue had, there would be a guard, and anyone who came in had to give whatever amount of money to come in, and if you couldn't afford the basic membership fee, then you couldn't come in. And so he was so poor in the beginning that he would go to the roof of the synagogue and he would put his ear next to the window that was on the top of the synagogue. And one night it was snowing heavily and he froze. And in the morning, the people inside were waiting for the light to come in from the sunlight, and it didn't come. So they figured something's going on. They went up, they found him frozen. And that's when the rabbi said, "Kedai hu zeh sheyechalelu alav et haShabbat." This is someone where it's very worthy to violate Shabbat to save his life, because look how much the rule is you save anyone's life on Shabbat, but this is extra worthy because look how much he dedicated himself to Torah. So Hillel comes from a poor background and he's very dedicated to learning. Second source is from Ethics of the Fathers, Pirkei Avot. Any disagreement that is for the sake of heaven is going to remain standing, and in a good way, meaning that it's not that one side will be consumed, but rather both sides are going to stay in place. If it's a machloket, if it's a disagreement which is not for the sake of heaven, but rather for selfish purposes, then it's not going to stand and someone's going to end up losing. Ezoi machloket shei l'shem shamayim. What is the quintessential example of a machloket, a disagreement, shei l'shem shamayim, which is for the sake of heaven? Zu machloket hilel v'shamay. The epitome of a machloket, which is done with the right intentions and not just for the sake of fighting, is the argument between Hillel and Shammai. That's given as the best example of a legitimate disagreement. V'sheina machloket l'shem shamayim. What's a machloket which is not with sincere intentions? Zu machloket Korach v'chol adato. That is the disagreement between Korach v'chol adato. Notice it doesn't say machloket Korach u'Moshe. Commentaries note this. But rather it says, Zomachloket Korach v'chol adato, meaning there weren't two sides to the argument. It wasn't Korach versus Moshe, it was more like Korach versus himself. He was just looking to pick a fight, and Moshe wasn't a party to that. The next source speaks about the evolution of disagreements in Judaism. Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yossi, Mitchila, in the beginning, Lo hayu marbin machlokot beYisrael. There were no, there weren't many disagreements among the Jewish people. Ela, Beit Din shel 71 yoshvim belishkat hagazit. There was the Supreme Court, the Sanhedrin, sitting in the temple. Ushnei batei dinim shel 23. There were two batei dinim that had 23 each. Echad yoshev al petach harabait, ve'echad yoshev al petach hazara. There were two batei dinim on harabait. Ushar batei dinim shel 23 yoshvim bechol ayarot Yisrael. And other courts, 23 each, were in every major Jewish city. Hutzrach hadavar lishol. If you really had a question, Shoalim mi beit din shebeiran. You ask the court that's in your city, which is really the system described in Devarim, where things are supposed to be resolved locally, and if it gets difficult, similar to what we see today, you go to the Supreme Court. Im shamu amrulan veim lav bain lezeh shesamuch beiram, etc. Now, if it's not resolved, it goes to Harbait. But now look at this final line. Misherabu talmidei shamai vehilel shaloshim shu kol tzorkan. Once you had many students of Shammai and Hillel who were not studious enough, they didn't learn enough, they didn't hang around their rabbis enough, Rabu machlokot beYisrael. There became many machlokot beYisrael. V'naset Torah kishtei Torot. And our Torah became like two Torahs. It's interesting to follow throughout this topic the different opinions and approaches there are to machloket, to disagreement. Sometimes it's cited in a positive way, like we just saw machloket l'shem shamayim. Sometimes it's seen as a very negative thing, like here it's the fact that there were disagreements is attributed to the fact that the students really didn't learn enough and didn't cling enough to their rabbis. There's a beautiful quote from Rabbi Cook, who was the chief rabbi of Israel before Israel became Israel. Already in the 30s, he was appointed as, in fact, I don't think he lived to see the state of Israel. He was appointed during the British Mandate in the 30s, and he was known for his Ahavat Israel and always for putting a very positive look on everything. There's a very beautiful story Rabbi Soloveitchik said over. You can find it on YouTube. It's a great find. Where he, in the 70s, went to visit Kibbutz Degania, or one of those kibbutzim, which used to be very, very socialist. Some of them were very Stalinist. And he goes to visit, and they figured they'll give a tour to the American rabbi. And he goes in, and they show him the kitchen, and he asks them, you know, is the kitchen kosher? And they say, yes, the kitchen is kosher. And he says, how's it possible? Because, you know, it was such a strongly communist, anti-religious environment. Why is your kitchen kosher? So they said, you know, you have a good point. So in the 1930s, Rabbi Cook went on a trip, and it was called Tiul HaMoshavot or Siur HaMoshavot, and he goes in a wagon, him and Rabbi Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld. I don't think they went on everything together. Rav Cook did, I think, covered more ground. And he comes to this kibbutz, and he's there to spend Shabbos. And so he brings his tuchalas and wine, and there's nothing kosher there. There's nothing remotely kosher. And they bring him to the dining room, and they make sure that the lights go on and off, and they show him everything they can possibly be doing against Judaism. And he sees it, and he's nice, and he's cordial. And then on Sunday, the time goes to leave, and he says, I want to leave you with one message. And they're waiting to hear what the rabbi's message is. And he says, whatever you do, always make sure that you eat your meals together and always keep the friendship that you have with one another. He left. The next day, they made the kibbutz kosher. So he was really, his power of Ahavat Yisrael and positive approach was really something that left a strong impact. So he writes here, Yesh to'im shechoshvim. There are people who are mistakenly thinking, Shehashalom ha'olami lo yibaneh ki im al yedei tzivyon echad bedeot v'tchunot. Some people think that world peace is going to come through the fact, through everyone thinking the same way and everyone believing the same things. And then when they see Torah scholars study things and come to different conclusions, and then you have everyone reaching their own conclusions, people think that by rabbis taking different approaches to things, it causes the opposite of peace, because now you have many different opinions. Really, that is not the case. Ki hashalom ha'amiti, the real peace, I efshar shiyavo la'olam, cannot come to the world, ki im dafka al yedei ha'erech shel ribui shalom. Only specifically by bringing more peace, ha'ribui shel ha'shalom hu, and the spreading of pieces, sheitra'u kol ha'tzadadim v'chol ha'shitot, v'itbareru ech kulam yesh lahem makom. And you'll see how everything has a place. So peace is not achieved through everyone having the same opinion, but to the contrary, by different people having different opinions and thinking in a unique way, that in and of itself brings peace. And that's what he says is the idea of Talmidei Chachamim Marbim Shalom Ba'olam. So again, we see different approaches to different opinions, to machlokot. Is it good or is it bad? Now, who were Hillel and Shammai, and how do their characters affect their positions? It's interesting. We assume that Hillel and Shammai have these very differing opinions. In matters of Jewish law and halakha, there are actually only three disagreements between Hillel and Shammai. And even in those three, we rule like neither. The difference between Hillel and Shammai doesn't really manifest so much in their halachic positions. It does manifest very much later in the opinions of Beit Hillel, then Beit Shammai. We'll see that in some cases the disagreement even got violent. But Hillel and Shammai themselves are expressions of different philosophies, but they themselves didn't have many halachic disagreements. So here's the very famous passage from the Gemara, source 6. Tanu Rabbanan. This is a beloved story. Ma'aseh ben Ochri echad sheba lifnei Shammai. Amar lo kama torot yesh lachem. A non-Jew came to Shammai and said to him, how many Torahs do you have? He said, shtaim, Torah shebichtav v'Torah shebal peh. He says, you know what? We have a Torah shebichtav, a written Torah, and a Torah shebal peh, spoken Torah. Amar lo, the non-Jew told him, shebichtav ani ma'amincha. I believe you about the Torah shebichtav. I'll accept the written Torah. V'shebal peh eini ma'amincha. But I don't believe you with regard to the oral Torah, the Torah shebal peh. Gaireini al menat shetelamdeini Torah shebichtav. I'll accept a conversion on the condition that you will only teach me the Torah shebichtav. Now, it's interesting because this conversation is also very, very relevant to the debate. I don't want to take sides on this, but to the debate on conversion standards for this day. Today, the common practice is to, if someone's converting, to make sure that they studied everything and that they, they're accepting every single thing and that there's no questions. They have to be fully baked Jew by the time they reach the point of conversion. Whereas here you see in some of these stories where they come and they say, let me convert so that, meaning with the intention of, and even though they're not fully knowledgeable of every aspect of Jewish life. But conversion is not the topic here. Yes?
What is the word
gaireini? Gaireini, like a ger is a convert. So make me a ger. Gaireini al menacha talamdeini Torah. Make me a convert if you teach me Torah, so you can teach me Torah shebichtav. So ga'arbo ve'otzioto benezifa. He scolded him and sent him out. Balifnei Hillel. He comes to Hillel, and believe it or not, girei. Hillel converts him. Amarlo, he tells him, now this is not any acronym, he tells him, aleph bet gimel dalet. He says, listen, aleph bet gimel dalet, first four letters. Fair enough. Lemachar apichle. The next day, he shows him the alphabet, but says different things. He says, Gimel Dalet Bet Aleph. He's like, no, this letter is that, this letter is that. Amar li v'etmol lo amar li achi. He says, yesterday you told me the Aleph looks like that, and today you're telling me it looks like a Dalet. What's going on? Amar li lav alai didika samacht. You see that you're relying on my word. If you're relying on my word, you got to take it the whole way and accept also Torah Shebaal Peh. And he ends up taking it. Another story, similar idea. Shuv ma'aseh ben ochri echad sheba lifnei Shammai. Another non-Jew comes to Shammai. Amar le gaireni al menat shetelamdeini kol ha-Torah kula kshani omed al regel achat. Famous story. He comes to Shammai, he says, teach me. It became an expression in Hebrew. When you say al regel achat, it means like the short version. But literally it means, you know, convert me if you can teach me the whole Torah while I'm standing on one leg. So he tells him, "Dchafo be'amata binyan shebe'edo." He pushes him away with a yardstick. So he comes to Hillel, and he has the same strange precondition. He says, "Make me a convert on the condition that you teach me the whole Torah while I'm standing on one foot." Amarlo, very very famous words, "De'alach sani lechavrach lo ta'avid." What you do not like done to you, don't do unto others. Yeah, what they teach every first grader. Zohi kola Torah kula. Everything in the Torah is that rule. The idach pirushahu, zil gmor. Everything else in the Torah is just an outcome of what you want done to yourself. What you don't like done to yourself, don't do to others. Everything else is an outcome. And indeed, he converts. So again, you see here, Shammai has a stricter approach. And the Maharal here in Source 7, Rabbi Yehuda Lowy, the great Kabbalist from Prague of the 16th century, says, what does it mean that he pushed him with a yardstick? I mean, there was no need to get violent or graphic, you know. He tells him he doesn't want to convert him. He could tell him goodbye. He doesn't need to take out a yardstick. And it sounds like he's pushing him out with this big stick. So he says, V'yirar perusho shed chafa Shammai b'midato shebo. Shammai showed him, not necessarily with his yardstick, but rather with the fact that he measured everything. Everything had to be precise, everything had to be proper, and Shammai told him, listen, if you're not following the rules, there's no exceptions, there's no wishy-washy. You can't come and say, I want to convert, but here are my conditions. There's the rule, there's the measure. You know, a foot is a foot, an inch is an inch. You're not changing that. But Hillel got the end result, but in a different way. Another story. See, there's a whole set of these stories. Shuv ma'aseh ben ochri echad. Another story. A non-Jew. Shaya over achorei beit hamidrash. He's walking next to the synagogue. V'shama kol sofer shehaya omer ve'ele habgadim asher yasu. He was walking. Now you got to wonder how it is that he understood the Hebrew. Could have been in places where Jews were teaching in different languages. But he hears them learning the parasha of the clothing of the Kohen Gadol, the garments of the Kohen Gadol. And he hears about the breastplate with the different colors and the two stones here with the names of the tribes and the hat and the gold on the forehead. It sounds good to him. He likes it. Amar halalu lemi. He said, who are these clothing for? It sounds like a nice wardrobe. Amrulo le Kohen Gadol. It's for the Kohen Gadol. So he figured, Amar oto nochri be'atzmo. He must have been a fashionable individual. Amar oto nochri be'atzmo. Elech ve'etgayer bishbir l'sheyesimuni Kohen Gadol. Let me convert so I can be the Kohen Gadol and I can get these clothing. So ba'lifnei Shammai, he comes to Shammai. Amar le gaireni al menachet esimeni Kohen Gadol. I want to convert on the condition that I will be the Kohen Gadol. Now maybe it was at the time, it was at the time where, you know, you could pay off Roman officials maybe, but still, it's quite the aspiration, especially, you know, he wasn't even Jewish. So, d'chafo ba'amata binyan shebiado, and again, Shammai pushes him away with the yardstick. Ba'lifnei Hillel, he comes to Hillel, Gairei, he converts him. And again, this has a lot of relevance to the discussion of conversion. Hillel converts him. But he tells him, listen, there's a little catch. Amar le, kluma amidim melech ela mishe yodea tachsisei malchut. Do you think you can appoint someone king if they don't know the ways of the royal court? Do you think you can make someone king if he doesn't know how to behave or the laws? So he says, listen, you're on your way to greatness, but go learn a bit before you start. Halach v'kara, he goes and he reads the Torah, and he's determined. Kevan shehegiyah, he reaches to the pasuk in Bamidbar, v'hazar hakarev yumat. It says that someone who is not a Kohen, who goes into the temple, into the sanctuary, yumat, is killed. Amar li, mikra zal minemar, he says, who's this pasuk talking about where it says if you go in and you're not, you don't belong, you get killed? Amar lo, afilu al David melech Israel. Even if King David, the ultimate king of the Jewish people, is walks into the Kodesh HaKodeshim, or even to the Kodesh, that's it, the end. Nasa oto ger kal vachomer batzmo. That ger says kal vachomer. Uma Yisrael shenikru'u banim lamakom. If the Jewish people who are called children of Hashem, umitoch ahava she'avam kara lahem bni bechori Yisrael, and that Hashem called them because He loved them so much, His firstborn, bni bechori Yisrael, my first child, and it, what does it say about this beloved nation? V'hazar hakarev yumat. It says that a person who comes in and doesn't belong, even King David, gets the death penalty. Ger hakal sheba b'maklo v'tarmilo alachat kama v'kama. If someone is a convert, and especially a convert like me, it's not like I invested. I came, I basically walked in because, like, I didn't really put in a lot of effort to it. And so, of course, I'm not going to be able to be Kohen Gadol. So he remained Jewish, but he backs off of his aspiration. Balifnei Shammai, he comes to Shammai, and he's upset at him. He's angry. Amar lo, klum ra'uy ani liyot Kohen Gadol? Am I able to be the Kohen Gadol? Ve'alo kativ batorah, it says in the Torah, ve'hazar hakarev yumat. It says in the Torah that so basically he's angry at Shammai. He's like, why didn't you just tell me there's a stipulation in the law that anyone, it's not anything against me, it would be anyone. Why didn't you, there's a lot, if you're into psychology, there's a lot to discuss here, what this guy was thinking, how he felt. And so he comes to Hillel, he comes in front of Hillel, Amar lo, anvintan Hillel, humble one Hillel, yanuchu lecha brachot al roshcha, may blessings come on your head, shehi kravtani tachat kanfei ha-shechina. You brought me under the wings of the Shechina, of the Divine Presence. Le'amim, days went by, nizdavgu shloshtam lemakom echad. All these three people, the first person from the guy who wanted to learn only Torah Shebichtav, the second person who said, teach me the Torah while standing on one leg, the third person who said, convert me while so that I can become Kohen Gadol, somehow they all were chatting together, and they share their experiences, and they say, look, this is what we went through. Amru, they said, Kapdanuto shel Shammai, the strict approach of Shammai, biksha letordeinu min haolam, would have driven us out of this world, meaning we would not be able to be part of the Jewish people. And vetanuto shel Hillel, the humility of Hillel, kirvanu tachat kanfei Shechina, has brought us under the wings of the Shechina. So it's interesting to see that this is a discussion that's not so much about differing positions, but it's more about an approach, an attitude. So Shammai is seen as someone with a strict attitude. It's not that Hillel and Shammai here have a differing halachic approach to conversion or to teaching Torah or whatever it is. It's the difference in their outlook. I think the word is Gemeinschaft. The way they look out of the world, that's the way... That's really what differs them. Hillel is humble, accessible. Shammai is more like the letter of the law. Now, there's an interesting machloket that everyone struggles with understanding because it goes against what we know and believe and like to believe about the laws of Shabbat. And it is taken from Masechet Beitza, page 16. So it's the top of page 3. Tanya, we learned in the Raita. Amru alav al Shammai Hazaken. They used to say about Shammai Hazaken, Kol yamav haya ochel lichvod Shabbat. All his life, he would eat for Shabbat. Now, what does this mean? Matza be'imana'a, he found a good animal, a nice animal. Omer zul Shabbat. Basically, he would go through the grocery store, see something good, and be like, this is for Shabbat, even if he did it on a Sunday. Matza acheret na'ahe mena. If he found then on, let's say, Tuesday, something that looked better, manich et hashniya ve'ochelet harishona. He would eat the first thing that he found, and he would keep the second. Aval Hillel hazaken, Hillel, however, had a different approach. Mida acheret haitalo, shekol ma'asav l'shem shamayim. Everything he did was for the sake of heaven. Shenemar baruch Hashem yom yom. Every single day he hoped that Hashem will send him something good. We said a braita that says that. Now, the reason this braita really bothers scholars and specifically those who rule on matters of halacha is because we know you are supposed to prepare for Shabbat. In fact, Rashi on Chumash, on Shmot, says, Zachor et yom ha-shabbat lekocho, remember Shabbat to sanctify it. And he says this is a mitzvah not just on Shabbat, but it's a mitzvah throughout the week. So whenever it is in the week that you see something good, try and prepare it for Shabbat, and it's cited in the halacha in Shulchan Aruch. So the commentaries struggle with this. Yes, this fits with Hillel's more laid-back position. He's not too uptight. He's not too nervous. But still, there is an element of importance to preparation for Shabbat from Sunday. So the Mishnah Brura, the Chafetz Chaim, goes through a whole explanation, says a few things. Either if you are as faithful and trusting of Hashem as Hillel is on everything, then you can do that also with your Shabbat food, but otherwise not. But in general, even though we love Hillel's more laid-back approach when it comes to Shabbat, the poskim are not rushing to take that side. And source 10 is again emphasizes this character issue. Tanu Rabbanan le'olam yehe adam anvintan kehillel ve'al yehe kapdan keshamay. A person should always be as humble as Hillel and should not be as stringent as Shammai. So you see that it's explicit. It's not just something that you derive from the stories, but actually the Talmud says, you know what Hillel and Shammai is about? It's about Hillel being more humble and willing to let things go, and Shammai being more strict, letter of the law. So the Talmud is clearly taking a side. Yeah.
Can I take you back a frame to the difference between Hillel and Shammai and the preparations for Shabbat?
Sure.
So I'm a little confused. This seems simply to be a Hashkafic perspective and mm-hmm. how to approach Shabbat. Mm-hmm. But you seem to have treated it as a halachic issue.
Yeah.
I don't understand the halacha.
So let me see if they have a Mishnah Brura here. But basically, if you look in Shulchan Aruch, there's a whole siman about preparing for Shabbos.
Yeah.
And so there, the poskim urge you to make sure the whole week to prepare for Shabbos.
But that if you don't prepare on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you're not over anything, correct?
Yeah, no, the question is, what's the ideal? So, for example, Rashi on Shemos, when Rashi comments on Zachor et Yom HaShabbat LeKadsho, he says that means that during the week, if you see something nice, keep it for Shabbat. So clearly, on this, even though somehow we agree with Hillel's personality, the poskim are not excited about approaching Hillel's approach of being like all chilled out and waiting to the last minute, but rather it's important to show respect for Shabbat by preparing in advance.
Okay, but maybe Hillel had a certain emunah that things would fall into place.
Yes, exactly. That's what he says. He says, Baruch Hashem Yom Yom, meaning every day, thank God, God is present and it's going to be good. So what the Chafetz Chaim says is, if you have that approach with other things, you know, if you're, you need to book tickets to someplace and you're like, I'm not going to book 3 months in advance, Hashem's going to help me, then do that also with Shabbat food. But if that's not your approach with mundane matters.
Okay, so they're advocating consistency. That's the name.
Yes, basically, yeah. So here's a fascinating debate, which is I'm not sure what to make of it. Source 11, because it's clearly not necessarily a physical disagreement. So let's see. Tanu Rabbanan, Beit Shammai Omrim, Shammai Nivreu Tchila V'Achar Kach Nivret Ha'aretz. Beit Shammai say, first the heavens were created, and then the earth was created. Shneemar, Bereshit bara Elokim et hashamayim ve'et ha'aretz. Very clear. God created the heavens and the earth. That is what Beit Shammai says. U'Beit Hillel omrim Eretz nivra atchila v'achar kach shamayim. First, the earth was created, and only after that, the heavens were created. Shenemar b'yom asot Hashem Elokim eretz v'shamayim. In the day that Hashem created eretz and shamayim. Now, what do we mean by eretz? You know, in the 70s, when was the first landing on the moon? Anyone?
69.
All right. So in 69, there were people at the time who cited the verse in Tehillim. They said, you know, it says, Hashamayim shamayim la Hashem, v'aretz natan livnei Adam. So must be there is a biblical mandate not to go to the moon. But of course, it's not true, because the idea is when we say Hashamayim shamayim la Hashem, we don't mean that God lives on the moon or even Mars, right? We mean that. It could be this all the galaxies, or so I don't know when it says here what came first. I don't know if to take Eretz as more of what we have with us here. So anyway, this is the disagreement. So Shammai says that first the heavens were created, then the earth. Hillel says first the earth was created, then the heavens were created. Now here comes a practical argument besides for the verses they cite. Amrulam Beit Hillel LeBeit Shammai. Beit Hillel told Beit Shammai, "Ledivreichem, according to you, Adam bone aliyah v'achar kach bone bait. What do you first do? Do you first build your attic, or do you first build your house?
Which source do you want?
11. It starts with Amru lahem Beit Hillel Beit Shammai. So Beit Hillel say to Beit Shammai, according to your position that first the heavens were created and then the earth. When someone builds a house, what do they build first? What? The foundation, right? So Beit Hillel are saying, how can you say that the heavens were created first? The whole point of the universe is the earth, and so clearly the foundation comes first, and the earth was created before the heavens. That's the argument here. Shenemar habone b'shamay malutav v'agudato al eretz yisada. The verse in Amos says that God created the heavens on the earth. So meaning the heavens lay on the earth, and therefore it must be that earth was created first. That's their argument. Now Beit Shammai come with a very interesting comeback. Amrulam Beit Shammai leBeit Hillel. Ledivrechem, Adam oseh srafraf v'achar kach oseh kiseh. What do you build first? When you build a throne, do you build the part that your feet rest on, or do you build the actual throne on? What comes first?
The throne.
So the Beit Shammai says, Shenemar, you may recognize this from the Haftorah, Ko amar Hashem, Hashamayim kis'i v'ha'aretz hadom raglai. It says in the verse that the heavens are my throne, and the earth is sort of where my feet rest. Now obviously, Hashem isn't physical.
Do you have any idea what?
I'm going to explain in a second, yeah, what it means, because it's very strange. So Ko amar Hashem, Hashamayim kis'i v'ha'aretz hadom raglai. The heaven is my throne, and the earth is where my feet rest. So there's a beautiful explanation, emphasized by Rav Kook. We'll see the same idea in the Malbim in the next source. But basically, when Shammai says that the heavens were created first, what they're saying is, first comes the standard. Fit yourself to the standard. The Shamayim were created first. First comes the Torah, the mitzvot. First come the rules. Now, earth is created, and we on earth, our job is to match ourselves to these divine standards. Make sure that when you behave, you gotta, there's like, remember his yardstick? You gotta meet the yardstick. That's what they're saying. Hillel says, no, the earth is created first. First you look at the person, you look at the human being, and then you try and figure out how to make sure that that person is very spiritual. By the way, there's a fundamental place that you see Hillel's impact in looking at the earth and being practical in Prusbul. Has anyone ever heard of Prusbul? Yeah? So basically, it says in the Torah that on the sabbatical year, not only can you not work the land, but also all the loans are forgiven. It's a debt forgiveness program. All the loans are forgiven on the seventh year. Hillel looks around. That's a beautiful standard. It's a beautiful mitzvah. He looks around. He sees that all the rich people are saying, what am I, crazy to lend someone money in the fifth or sixth year? I'm never going to get my money back. So then the poor people had no one to borrow money from. So he fixes up this whole system called a prusbul, whereby when you lend someone, you're doing it through the Beit Din, a third party, which is sort of a corporation, non-profit, whatever you want to call it. And he enables the poor to borrow money again. Now you may say, well, does this fit the ideal mitzvah of Shemitah? Not so much. But he looks at what's going on. He looks at the aretz, he looks at the standard here, and he says, guys, this isn't going as planned. So that's the idea of Hillel being more aretz-based. And this the Malbim, source 12, the Kvar Amarnu Shebinyan Hazeh, היו מחולקים בית שמאי ובית הלל. ששמאי והנמשכים אחריו היה דרכם למאס בעולם הזה ולעזוב כל ענייני החומר. שמאי were aesthetic. They left all the matters that were material and they weren't really excited by this world. והילל והנמשכים אחריו היו אומרים שאין לעזוב את העולם. Hillel and his people were saying that there's no reason to abandon this world. And we'll see that there's another argument that follows later. By the way, can anyone think of a historical phenomenon of that era that reflects this? So you have the people with the Dead Sea Scrolls, right? So this is what's going on at this time. This is the beginning of it, of this era. But with every year that goes by, the ideological radicalism and disagreements at this time just blow up exponentially. So this is an important argument, but not too far from here. It's important just for context to note that you're going to have people who believe that you can't live as part of this world, and they go and live in caves next to Yam HaMelech, and it's completely, it's I believe only men, completely separate, or not separate, it's only men, and they have these extreme rituals with purity. And so this is a time where, and part of this is also Jesus emerging, because there's this whole ideological soul-searching where everyone is really focused on what the right thing to do is, what the right ideology is, and that's what's going on here. So this is really the very, very beginning of it, but it's part of what exhausts things, and this is the environment in which you have Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, where you have so many cults in the Jewish people, and everyone's seeking the exact spiritual path that they should be taking. And so this approach of not wanting this world, of wanting a more spiritual existence, is you can see the beginning of it here. Source 13 is also a reflection of what's going on in that time. Also reminds you a lot of what was going on in the early days of Christianity. This is from Avot de Rabbi Natan, which is, Avot de Rabbi Natan is a version of Pirkei Avot, but much more expansive. So there's examples for everything. It's much more descriptive than just the Pirkei Avot that we have. So Avot de Rabbi Natan, V'ha'amidu Talmidim Harbeh. When we learn Mishnah, it just says V'ha'amidu Talmidim Harbeh. Here it says, She'Beit Shammai Omrim, Beit Shammai say, Al yishne adam ela lemisha uchacham ve'anav uben avot ve'ashir. Now that's a whole lot of things. So Beit Shammai say, you should not teach Torah to someone unless they are smart, humble, have come from a good family background, and are wealthy. Right? So that's a tough bar to meet. Beit Hillel omrim, Beit Hillel say, lekol adam yishne. You should teach Torah to anyone. Sheharbe poshim hayu b'em b'Yisrael. There were many criminals among the Jewish people. V'nikrevu le'talmud Torah, and they came closer to the study of Torah. V'yatzu mehem tzadikim chasidim v'ksherim. And from that came really righteous, good people. So you can see the strictness of the Beit Beit Shammai really manifesting in a strong way. Beit Hillel say, no, you know, you should just teach anyone. And who do you think of when you think of a criminal that came close to Judaism? Anyone? There's a few. There's Reish Lakish, who was, you know, Rabbi Akiva was just like an Am Haaretz. He wasn't...
Reish Lakish was a robber.
Reish Lakish was like a real criminal. You would see his picture in the post office. He was, you know, he was the real deal. They meet while he's in action. So that's an example of how people study Torah and they come closer. But Beit Shammai say, no, you can only teach people who come from a very strict family background. And you see that in history books with the early history of Christians where... where Jesus is all enraged by the class system that's going on. It's kind of interesting because really, if you look at what was going on those days, the people who were most class-oriented and perpetuated most class differences were the Kohanim. The Kohanim lived in Jerusalem, and they were the wealthy ones, and they controlled everything. And the house of Hashmonai, who were Kohanim, went against the commandment of the Torah and also took themselves to be the kings. And so they were really... riding high, and it was strict. If you were poor, you're out. They were very strict about that. But
what is Beit Shammai's rationale here? I don't understand that.
For only teaching Torah
to the elites, to the rich.
Basically to the elites. So that's a good question. You find it again with the story with the deposition of Rabban Gamliel. The story in Brachot where he's deposed. And once he is kicked out and sort of unthroned, they say they open the gates of the Beit Midrash, Nitrabu Asaf Salim, and suddenly the place explodes with students, and he starts crying, and he says, Oili Shemiatati Torah Me Israel, I am the guilty of preventing Torah from Israel. Just so before I answer you, it's easy to understand why Hillel does not have this approach. Remember, he's the guy that's on the roof, and he's trying to study Torah. He can't even afford tuition. So he comes from the outside, and that gives him that perspective. Why do Beit Shammai have this perspective? I guess the idea is, you want the Torah to be... you want people who study Torah to be an embodiment of it, right? So you want them to be well-behaved, etc. So according to Beit Shammai, when you start that, you get a candidate that's the perfect candidate. You get someone who's already well-behaved, comes from a good family, presumably you know that everything's going to be okay. You don't want to bet the Torah on someone who's going to end up being a crook. According to Beit Hillel, you can only win here. No,
and Ashirim
are
not crooks?
Ashirim part, especially, yes. The Ashirim part, I can't really answer you. But I guess the idea is that you want the person who's exemplifying Torah to be already sort of a royalty, but obviously we don't take this position, and the position was proven radically wrong the second Rabban Gamliel is deposed and they open the gates, and suddenly you have these people packing in to the Beit Midrash. But yeah, it's disturbing. Here's a fascinating one. Source 14, Tanu Rabbanan, you all know this song. Ketzad Merakdin Lifnei Akala. This is where it comes from. This is also a very interesting one. So, how do you dance in front of the bride at the wedding? Beit Shammai Omrim, Kala Kemochehi. You say the praises of the Kala. You know, if you're Hasidish, there's a mitzvah tanz and a badchen, and he gets up there and he says the praises of the families, even praises that don't exist, but that's what he does. So they used to have this custom of standing at a wedding and praising the bride. Ubeit Hillel omrim lichvoda shel kala sharim kalana b'chasuda. It doesn't matter who the bride is. We always say good things about the kala. Amrula and Beit Shammai lo Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai told Beit Hillel, Harei shaita kala chigeret. What if the bride was crippled, osuma, or she was blind? Omrim la kalana avachasuda, you say, oh, what a beautiful and lovely bride. Varei atoramra midvar sheker tirchak. The Torah says, stay away from a matter that is not true. Amrulan Beit Hillel Beit Shammai. So Beit Hillel respond to Beit Shammai. Ledivreichem, according to your position, mishe lakach mekach ra minashuk. Are you gonna say good things? In fact, it says one of the mitzvahs of the Torah is called onaat dvarim. You're not allowed to say to someone something that they're gonna be embarrassed of. Like if someone just got out of jail, and they come, you're not supposed to be like, oh, so how was jail in front of? It's gonna be embarrassing to them. It also says that if you see your friend just bought something, right? Let's say you see someone just bought a tie and you think the tie is terrible, or you think they were overcharged. You're not allowed, unless it's something that they can return and that you can be constructive. If it's a sealed deal, you're not allowed to come and say, I can't believe you paid that money for this shmata. It's not, it's onat dvarim. It's just causing them pain. So Beit Hillel responds to Beit Shammai, according to your opinion of being like all honest and you're gung-ho on that honesty thing, so what? If you see someone buy something that's not so good, you're going to tell them that? So that's this response. Again, you see Beit Hillel are more in tune with the public, and Beit Shammai are more like fixed on the strict line. The next one is a sad disagreement. Tanu Rabbanan, 2 shanim u'mechta, 2.5 years. Nechleku Beit Shammai u'Beit Hillel. They argued. If anyone here studied, I didn't study philosophy, but if you did, I'm sure this is a fascinating passage. Halalu omrim noach lo la'adam shenivra yoter mishenivra. Beit Hillel say, I'm sorry, Beit Shammai say, noach lo la'adam shelo nivra yoter mishenivra. It's kind of an existential question, but they say, You're better off if you would never have been created. Why? Because you're doomed to make some mistakes, to sin. V'halalu omrim, Beit Hillel say, no. Noach lo la'adam shenivra yoter mishelo nivra. It's better for you to have been created than not created. Nimnu v'gamru, so they held a vote. I don't know what the proportions were, how many of each were there. V'gamru, noach lo la'adam shelo nivra yoter mishenivra. Indeed, it's better to not have been created. You should try and do good deeds. Again, Beit Hillel are positive about life. They want you to be in this world. Now, one of the biggest debates and most public debates between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai is the topic of smicha. Usually when we say smicha, we mean rabbinic ordination. But in the Talmud and the Mishnah, it's actually much less... There's much less novelty to it. So smicha, anyone here? What's the smicha in the Mishnah? So basically, when you bring a korban, in those days, you put your hands on the head of the korban. The question is, do you do this on Yom Tov or not? Can you do this on a holiday or not? And that was one of the biggest debates ever. Because it has to be resolved. It's not like, if you have a debate whether you should have been created or not, fine, let everyone be happy with their opinions. But if it's how to do the smicha, that's going to manifest in the temple. And another disagreement is, according to Beit Hillel, you can bring a korban shlamim. I'm sorry, you can bring a korban ola, a sacrifice that's burned completely on Yom Tov. According to Beit Shammai, since you're not eating any of it, you can't bring it on Yom Tov. So these debates were most prominent in the Beit HaMikdash. Anyone know the story with the etrog throwing? Basically, the temple became the epicenter of where public debates were held, because you needed to know how the halacha was. So you have all the stories with the Kohanim Gedolim who were Sadducees, and the temple, because there's only one standard. You can't say, Israel figured out a way around this. They said, let's have an Ashkenazi chief rabbi and a Sephardic chief rabbi, no problem. But in the temple, there's one Kohen Gadol, there's only one way to do it. So whose way do you follow? So there was a Tzeduki Kohen Gadol. He came, he was on the Mizbech in Sukkot, and he didn't believe in the mitzvah of Nisuch HaMayim, pouring the water in the Mizbech, and he pours it on his feet. And we'll see next week, this was more of a Sadducee Pharisee disagreement. It says that everyone that was there took their etrog, and they basically etrogged him to death. They threw. So in the temple, this is where things were, the debates were serious. So it says, there was a whole debate about this. La'achar yamim gavraya dan shel Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai had the upper hand in this. Ubikshu likvo alacha kedivrim. They tried to establish halacha in the temple like them. V'ayasham Baba ben Buti mitalmidei Beit Shammai yodea shahalacha kebeit Hillel. One of the Beit Shammai students was a double agent. He knew that the halacha is like Beit Hillel. Pam achat nichnas la'azara u'matza otah shomemet. He found no one in the temple on Yom Tov, because the Beit Shammai said not to bring korban ola. Amar yishamu batehen shel elu sheshimu Beit Elokeinu. He said, may the homes of these people become desolate, because they made the house of our God desolate. Ma'asa, what did he do? I guess he was a wealthy guy. Shalach vevi 3,000 tzon mitzon kedar. He brought 3,000 sheep. Ubikrom emumin vehemudun be'arabait. He brought them to Harabait. Amarlan, he announced, Shim'uni Achai Beit Yisrael, listen to me, my Jewish brothers. Kol mishu rotze yavi olot, yavi ve'ismoch, yavi shlamim ve'yavi ve'ismoch. Anyone who wants can bring a korban. Everyone decided by popular vote that Beit Hillel was right. Now here's a more romanticized version of what happened. Mishnah Nivamot. Afal pi she'elu osrim ve'elu matirim, elu poslim ve'elu machshirin. Even though Beit Hillel said something's permitted, Beit Shammai said it's forbidden, some said it's kosher, some said it's not kosher. Lo nimne'u Beit Shammai melisan hashim Beit Hillel. If you were a Beit Shammai family, you had no problem marrying a girl or a boy from the Beit Shammai family, and vice versa. Meaning, even though they had strong disagreements, they ate at each other's homes, and they married into each other's families. Not only that, when they did things of Tum'ah and Tahara, of purity, which if yours touches something that you believe is unpure, it becomes unpure as well, they still use the same mikvahs, etc. So they respected the differences of opinions. Next one, source 18. Amar Rabbi Abba Amar Shmuel, Shalosh Shanim Nechalku Beit Shammai Ubeit Hillel. 3 years, there was a whole debate between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Halalu Omrim Halacha Kmotenu, Halalu Omrim Halacha Kmotenu. So who do we decide with? Like, Yatzah bat kol v'amra, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. This is the famous quote of Elu ve'elu. A bat kol came and said, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. But eventually, you'll see there's a source of a bat kol that says we decide like Beit Hillel. Mipnei mazachu Beit Hillel likvo halacha kmotanu. Why did Beit Hillel have the merit of halacha always being established like them? Mipnei shenochin ve'aluvin hayu. They were flexible and they were humble. V'shonin divrehem ve'divrei Beit Shammai. When they would say something, they would say, I say this, and also here's what Beit Shammai say. V'lo od, not only that, Ela shemakdimin divrei Beit Shammai ledivrehem. If you were a student of Hillel, and you're saying something, first you quote the position of Shammai, and then you quote your own position. So they were very modest, and they gave Beit Shammai respect. L'lam decha, to teach you, shekola mashpil atzmo, anyone who makes themselves modest, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Magbiyo, God makes them high. V'kol HaMagbiyo Atzmo, whoever makes himself high, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mashpilo. Now, source 20 is a kind of a brutal source, and it speaks about the day that there was the ultimate disagreement between Hillel and Shammai. This does not appear in any of the Bavli sources. Oto hayom kashay al Yisrael kiyom shenasa bo ha'egel. The day that you had these disagreements emerge was as difficult as the day that the Jews made the golden calf. Tana Rabbi Yoshua Unya, Talmidei Beit Shammai Amdulan Milamata Vayu Horgin Betalmidei Beit Hillel. The students of Shammai came and were killing the students of Hillel, and some say it's just that they held their swords. But the bottom line is, there are, when you look at the Talmud Bavli, you see this lovely description of people marrying into each other's families and eating together and no problem, you know, badats, rabanut, no matter what people held, they all ate together. I'm sure both speak to real experiences, but you see in the Talmud Yerushalmi there were cases of real violence between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. So it's a fascinating topic. It's the bedrock of written and sustained disagreement among the Jewish rabbis. The reason you have all these books, not all, but most of them, following it is because what that began was a tradition of disagreements, differences of opinions. We saw that to a large extent, differences of opinion can be a good thing, machlokechi l'shem shamayim, but also there's the mourning of the loss of a standardized version of Judaism and the beginning of everyone just doing their own thing. Any questions, comments? Yeah?
So, I don't think we got into this, but we followed Beis Hillel mostly, right?
Yeah.
Why?
So that's this quote. It says, Mipnei ma nikva halacha. Two things. First of all, there's the bat kol. There was a bat kol that came and said that we rule like Beit Hillel. But also it says in source 18, Umipnei ma zachu Beit Hillel likva halacha kmotan. Why did Hillel get the halacha like them? Mipnei shenochin ve'aluvin hayu. And also you can imagine there was an element of popular vote, meaning you can imagine if you have a group that says everything has to be exactly this way and you can have only these people studying Torah, etc., it's not a popular position. And so I imagine that also the popular vote was strongly with Beit Hillel. We'll see also next week that the Karaites and Sadducees eventually, I'm sorry, not the Karaites and Sadducees, the Pharisees and Sadducees, the rabbinic Judaism versus those who didn't believe in Torah Shabbat, but was also decided very much by popular vote.
So this is a populist tradition.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, again, there's the idea that there was the Bat Kol, and there was also, but there ultimately there's the fact that people just decided Beit Hillel is the way to go, and the same thing happened with the Sadducees. The Tzedukim were mainly the families of the Kohanim, who were the rich elite, and you can imagine that didn't resonate well with people. Thank you, everyone, so much for coming and listening. Very much appreciated. Oh, sure. Yeah, here, one second. Let me...